And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hey, you people out there, wherever you are. This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here. And in the studio with me today on my left is Malcolm Berman, our producer.
Yay, Malcolm.
Yay, Malcolm. And to my right, Jeff and Jerry Cutler.
And yay, Jeff and Jerry.
This is Jeff.
Yes. And if you want to catch the show whenever you want, wherever you want, we go to, you could say it, go ahead.
MalcolmDigitalRadio.com.
Very good.
And you go to The View from Over Here, and we're available 24/7. So, if you can't sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, come to the show and you look at the pictures, and if you want to see Jerry and Jeff, you'll see them. The only place they're performing for 24 hours. Or you can go to Temple, I think, this Friday?
This Friday.
And where's your Jerry? By the way, Jerry is a rabbi.
A funny rabbi.
Thank you.
And Jeff is the Rebbitzin.
The Rabinovich.
The Rabinovich?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call the Rabinovich. When I was in KBC Radio.
Yeah.
That's what Ken would call
it. Can we shorten that and
did
say
that? Did he do it by mistake or on purpose?
No, he knew what he was doing.
Oh, okay.
Rabbi Cutler and the bitch.
Let me finish up with that joke that I was starting to tell during our intermission. It has to do with Bill Clinton, okay? And they were doing a survey in Washington, D.C., an independent company, and they questioned 10,000 females at random. And the question was, would you have sex with the president, Bill Clinton? And if I recall correctly, the answer was, 85% of all of those surveyed all said never again.
Very funny.
What did he think he was, Will Chamberlain?
No.
I think
Will Chamberlain, yeah, I had a few. A thousand, I think he said.
About 10,000.
I remember Joe Namath bragging when he was interviewed for Playboy magazine many years ago. He said when he was a quarterback in college, he said in this article, if I recall it correctly, the number was about 300. So
but that was his freshman year.
Okay, which college? Which college?
Alabama.
Don't remember which college. No, I couldn't.
Was asking him.
Oh, yeah, because Joe Namath was my hero because I was living in New York at that time when he played for the New York Jets.
And you remember the football game where they won the Super Bowl,
Super Bowl III.
Whatever it was, they cut out. To put on Heidi.
Oh, that wasn't the Super Bowl. That wasn't the Jets.
A playoff game. Yeah, it was the Jets.
Positively.
He played for the Jets.
Positively.
When he started out professional football.
Yeah.
I remember him being on Playgirl magazine. Do you remember that?
No.
He was like the first guy who was on Playgirl. Did you ever hear of Playgirl?
Yeah, wasn't that Burt Reynolds had the
Burt Reynolds was on it.
Burt Reynolds, he was in Cosmopolitan, wasn't he?
Was it Playgirl? I don't
remember. He was on Playgirl, and he was wearing pantyhose.
I remember that being written up back in New York.
Well, Namath did
many,
a commercial for
many
that.
Years ago.
Yeah.
He used to do a commercial for men's pantyhose.
I think that's why. He said something
to the effect like, if I look this good, think of how good you ladies will look.
That's funny.
No, it was men's pantyhose because I tried pantyhose one time because
– Why?
I was I'm allergic to wool. And a lot of the suits in New York are woolen suits. So in the wintertime, I would wear woolen suits and it would itch me like crazy. So I tried the pantyhose.
Did it work?
No, because I have hairy legs. And the pantyhose against the legs, the hair – were worse than
then
itch
you should
from
have
the...
tried shaving.
She has an answer for everything.
it wasn't in vogue for men at that time.
Do you know?
Even though I lived in the West Village.
You know who did a Burt Reynolds shoot? You'll never believe it, but I represented him at the time. Jackie Vernon.
Jackie Vernon.
we were in Vegas, I think, was performing, and we got a room, and they came up with the cameras, and Jackie would be on the sofa completely buck naked, and for a magazine shoot for a Playgirl.
Now, this was before or after you got ordained?
No, I was ordained, but after ordination, I was a personal manager.
Well, which came first? You had a number of careers. Was rabbi first, or was comedian first?
No, comedian. Comedian. I was in college when I started professionally.
Okay.
And my first job was at Ehrenreich's Playrest Hotel.
The Catskill Mountains?
In Lakshelgrik.
Lakshelgrik, okay.
Yes.
Is the hotel still there?
Nothing is there.
I don't think the Catskills are still there
anymore. Nothing.
You come from a family of rabbis, right?
Oh, yes.
Sixth generation?
Well, sixth generation. My brother came up with this. I don't know how he found out or if he looked into it. But I'll tell you a little story. There was a book being written by a relative of mine. And the guy who was doing it called up my brother, and my brother said we're sixth generation. And then he called me. He said, I just spoke to your brother. I'm doing a book about your cousin. He said, you're sixth generation rabbis. I said, well, if my brother said so, I guess so. He said, well, what were you before? I said, I don't know, horse thieves. I have no idea. But anyway, a few months later, my brother calls me up. Did you tell this guy that we were horse thieves?
It's in the book.
It's in the book.
It's in the book. It has to be true.
And I'll tell you who, and he hasn't spoken to me since, about Ralph Lauren. Ralph is a cousin.
Oh, is it?
Yes. And it was in Ralph Lauren's biography that this guy wrote that we were horse thieves.
I thought I saw the movie with you, but in the movie you were a singer.
The jazz singer. Actually, I did a movie as a Bollywood movie.
Yeah, here in the U.S.?
In New York, yes.
You look a little Indian. Do you have Indian blood in you?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I'm
American Indian?
50%.
You can open up a casino. You only need one-eighth, I think.
Yeah, that's incredible. Indian.
Bollywood movie?
I did the movie.
And you're still getting residuals.
And what's it called?
Invitation to a Divorce.
And I read that it was not going to be. But anyway, when I got there, I didn't know what to. I was picked up by a bus. They brought me to the set. And I go off the bus. There's everyone I know. There's Lainey Kazan.
Elliot Gould.
Oh, yeah.
Sorvino.
It was all the linesmen. Yeah.
So, it was Paul Sorvino. Well, the funny part about it, the linesman was Sorvino, who's very Italian. It was a Jewish friend. In fact, Jamie, the one
from Sopranos. She was the daughter on Sopranos.
Oh, Jamie Sig, whatever.
Yeah, Sigler.
Sigler.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was the one who was getting married, and I was to perform the marriage. And
it was after the wedding
that we had to do a horror. So Lainey is saying, no, this is the way you do a horror here. No one asks me. And then Sorvino said, no. Well, we had a fight. Sorvino's version or Lainey's version.
Was this on a film?
Yeah.
Did they film that?
You know what?
The argument, the fight?
Oh, no.
The film, we have a copy of it. I never looked at it.
We were going to have a screening party.
We'll have a screening party.
It didn't open this country, so I said, thank God no one saw it. Meanwhile, I get an email from Israel.
They saw it.
From a dear friend of ours, who's an entertainer. Yoel Shar, who is a wonderful, wonderful entertainer. He said, we saw you in a movie. And their comment was, very nice.
Very nice.
Which is a kiss of death. Very nice. That was,
speaking about Italians and Jewish, no, not Jewish films, there's a guy, Johnny. Johnny I know from the Palm Restaurant. He's Italian. He's from Rome.
You went to the Palm Restaurant?
I went to the Palm in my youth.
Oh, I'm very impressed.
But I didn't eat any lobster or shrimp because, of course, I'm kosher.
No, not really.
They have a great dish there. It's never on the menu.
It's not there, that's why.
Well, you find another one. They have them in New York and in Nashville.
No, they have it in L.A. They just moved.
Yeah, they just moved to Beverly Hills.
Yeah. Yeah. Just playing around.
Go ahead.
The dish that they have, I get it whenever I go there, chicken parmesan. It's never on the menu, and
I don't
it is
eat
a
that.
Great dish. And they give you so much.
And that's it'll, chicken it lasts me, and fleishadick and milkadick yeah. mix.
Well,
and,
it lasts me like 3 days.
And it's only $90. But anyway, so Johnny, I know for years as a waiter there. A few years ago, I met him at LA Fitness. And, of course, LA Fitness were taking a shower, and I see on his neck is a big Jewish star. I said, Johnny, you know, you're Italian. How do you have a Jewish star? He looks at me. He says, schmuck, I was born Jewish. He said, in Rome, they have one of the oldest synagogues there are, and I'm Jewish. I was born that way. So he was telling me about this whole Jewish community in Rome, which I never knew about.
Oh,
but, of course, I know you know about.
Our daughters.
So Paul Savino might be Jewish.
No,
for all you know.
But he's not. I know he's not.
So this our daughters went to High Holidays at that synagogue when they were in Rome. And they missed us so much. They did Rosh Hashanah there, and they flew home to do Yom Kippur.
Interesting.
Well, I go to your temple for Yom Kippur.
Well, our service is a little different.
Yeah.
But this rabbi is walking down the street, and he passes a lobster restaurant. He happens to look, and he sees the president of the synagogue sitting and eating lobster. He couldn't believe it. And he kept on looking and looking and looking. And finally, when the guy finished and he walked out, the rabbi approached him. He said, Saul, I couldn't help it. I passed by and I saw you eating a lobster. How can you? He said, oh, no, it's okay. It was under a rabbinical supervision.
Oh.
Okay, throw that one out.
Okay, can that one?
All right.
Do we have the rim shot, Aaron?
You know, we were talking about the Oscars the last time we were here.
Oh, a long time.
That, actually, that was last week.
Yeah, last week. Yeah.
And, week ago.
But that, there was something that happened on the Jimmy Kimmel show, which followed the Oscars. And he had on Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick doing their roles in The Producers.
Yeah.
And this time, instead of looking for a show that would lose money after getting all the money from all the old women and it becoming a hit, they decide they're going to do The Candidate. And they look for someone who they can back and bring in lots of money and will lose. And so they pick Donald Trump. And it's the same scenario as with doing the show.
Yeah, I have a political question.
Question, I was told while growing up by my parents and other relatives, two things you should never talk about with people. Unless it's a real, real close friend that you know and they know you, you shouldn't talk about religion or politics.
That's right.
And I'm sure you've heard it, which apparently you did. Yet I don't find that to be a problem today. People are more open, more understanding, better educated.
Yeah, very definitely.
No, that's only if they agree with you.
Right, I forgot that part.
But wherever I go, they want to discuss religion.
Religion.
Yeah,
well,
they always get into
Rabbi Cutler.
Into rows.
See, I have the ideal relationship with my mother-in-law. My wife is from El Salvador, and she was raised Roman Catholic, even though she's more Jewish than I am. But with her mother. but with mother-in-laws, especially when they're Latino women, they're into the religion, and here she has a Jewish son-in-law. But the thing is, I don't speak Spanish, and she doesn't speak English. So we cannot talk about religion or politics. I mean, we get along enough
so
for...
You get along with her
famously. We get along famously because we can do hand signals as far as, eating, am I my full, blah, blah, blah. But no politics.
I had the same thing. Jeff's mother, God bless his soul.
She only speaks English.
Spoke with a thick Scottish accent.
Oh.
See, I didn't hear that.
No,
well, you're from that part of the world. You won't hear it.
She's a lovely woman from Glasgow and her husband. They were wonderful people. And I could never understand her. And she thought everyone, of course, could. And she would, one day, as this is true. I don't know if you're going to believe me, but one day while speaking, she said, apparently said, you know, you've been with my daughter. Would you marry her? And I said, yes, of course.
Of course, this is a joke.
It's not a joke. I said yes to everything. I committed myself not knowing.
Not realizing.
So I had to marry her.
You had to marry
her. She had to.
Let's not go into that.
We don't want to know those. But it's true what you said, because one time, a few years back, Meryl and I, we took a cruise, a Mediterranean cruise. And we were sitting at the same table, maybe a table like this, and one of the couples was – well, no, there were only two people at the table.
You and Marilyn.
Me, Meryl, and I meant two couples, and a couple from someplace in England. I don't know where. But for 12 days, I had no idea what the hell they were talking about, supposedly speaking the same language, and all I did – Yeah. I don't know what I was answering to. Yeah, no clue.
Very safe to agree. But it was true. I could never. Her father, I understood.
Well, my father speaking with an American accent 6 months before we got here.
Well, talking about this, you know, people not that speaking English or that aren't from this country, I got into a car. This is about 20 years ago. I got into a car accident in Texas. And I was still from New York, and I spoke three times as fast as I speak now. Texas Rangers stopped us to report the accident. And they spoke with a southern accent like there were cotton balls in the mouth. And I could not understand what they said. And I said, you know, could you speed it up a little bit? And they didn't understand what I was talking about. And I had to slow it. It reminded me of the Winston Churchill saying, we were two countries separated by a common language. But it was so funny.
Even to this day, there are parts of this country where we live where people speak with some kind of a dialect or whatever, and you can't understand them. Even
that's
here,
yes.
In our own country.
That's Louisiana.
In Italy, they have that too. Like, I haven't been there, but I've heard from people that have been there and come from Italy. In Bari, however it's pronounced, B-A-R-I, compared to the rest of the boot, Bari is on the heel of the boot. They don't understand each other because their dialect is so opposite. And the same thing when they write. Person from that end won't know what you're writing if you're from Rome and vice versa.
Oh, that's interesting, because also along that boot, that's not the Mediterranean, it's the
Adriatic.
The Adriatic Sea. And so it's the Adriatic countries, I'm sure, that have influenced their language.
Jeff, where were you raised? I mean, were you born in England?
I was born in England. My parents were from Glasgow. And my father was a musician. He played with all the big bands in England. And so he moved to London. And he was doing a show in Bournemouth, which is a little seaside town. It's on the mouth of the
River Bourne. You don't have any
the River Bourne.
Trace of accent.
I'll tell you why, yeah.
Well, actually, you did when you were speaking earlier.
No, she goes into it. If she's with friends from England, she will sort of slide into it.
Or if you get angry at him.
How about
or
if you have
two glasses
of wine?
Right. Anyway, so I was born in Bournemouth. And we have palm trees in Bournemouth.
Really?
We might have two.
And what age did you come to the States?
I was eight. I had a brother. My brother passed away a few years ago, but my brother was 13 years older than me, and he stayed in England. And my mother hadn't talked to him for a while. When she talked to him on the phone, he said, "Mother, you sound so Scottish. How did you get so Scottish?" "This is the way I've always talked."
Yeah, because for some reason the English do not lose their accents. I have a friend.
Oh, but wait a minute. You have English actors and actresses coming on films with American accent.
They do that on purpose. But when you hear them speak in their native language, they have the English accent there. They're excellent as far as speaking American.
Yeah. Well, I worked at losing my accent. Mm. We were living in Chicago, and I was doing a lot of commercials. And at that time, you had to be mid-America. English wasn't in.
It's a Walter Cronkite. That was
so
a voice
I learned to say, my R's are hard. And so I could work. Yeah.
I don't want to go into that. You're married to a rabbi. So.
Yes, she is. Do you know?
How did you two meet?
There are two different versions, and we'll get into
two versions.
And mine is the right one.
Well, of course.
I'm honest. He has a bad memory.
I was my writing partner. Took me up to, he knew her, and she had a gallery.
An art gallery.
In New York or Chicago?
No, here.
Los Angeles, okay. For 5 minutes. Meaning that it was where we lived, and our dining room table, everything was made by an artist. Mm. And we brought out three artists from New York, and it was modern art. So go ahead,
right, take
Jerry.
Over, Jerry.
Okay. I went up there and I looked at the art. It was the ugliest pictures I had ever seen. I was sick. And I could not understand what any picture represented. There were colors everywhere and all sorts of designs. And I was looking at it from all angles. I said, I don't understand this.
It's what did it make you feel?
He didn't buy a damn thing.
Well,
and we sold 3/4 of what was hanging on the wall.
Any name artists?
No.
Well, Picasso, you know, who is? What woman do you know has
Picasso
four breasts?
Picasso, you heard of. These guys will never be heard of.
Except on the Antique Roadshow.
Anyway, I did a TV show with a Presbyterian minister, a lovely man, called For Goodness Sake, and we interviewed celebrities who did good. Instead of the bad reviews.
And my background, I'm sorry, was always in show business. And I got into this art gallery because I had
money. Out of the furthest remove from any show business aura that we interviewed Walter Matthau.
No, she was in show business. If you were managing or running an art gallery, you're acting all the time anyway.
Well, yes.
Okay?
It wasn't. I'm telling
and
you.
And it was by invitation only. So I would be at dinner parties.
How did you invite Jerry?
That was the opening.
No, they invited my partner.
Ah, okay.
So that's how you got in.
And he said, my partner loves art. And he buys a lot. I said, bring him.
The only art I saw there was the guy's name who was art. I'm one of the pictures. That was the only claim to art in this whole
Well, office. I was hired to do the announcer on this show that he's telling you about, for goodness sake.
So we did For Goodness, and we said, let's get an announcer. And my partner said, well, why don't we get Jeff? She speaks beautifully, which she does, and clearly. And we'll open up the glass ceiling because you don't have women announcing shows.
By the name of Jeff, no one knew she was a woman.
By Jeff, exactly.
Oh, did you use her full name?
Gallagher.
Jeff Gallagher.
Jefferson.
No, we didn't.
Jeff. Okay. Jeff, because we thought that was a good hook for people to say, wow. The rabbi's marrying a guy. This is what a forward. He's living with someone named Jeff.
Well, that's
years ago. There was a fairly well-known actress whose name was Jeff.
Jeff Dinell.
I thought it was Donnell.
No.
Well, whatever. Anyway, she's probably gone by now.
Yeah. Where'd you go?
You're right, incidentally. Anyway,
Donnell.
Not Dinell. No. Anyway. So she was my announcer, and
that's what I started out as. But Jerry is he's a very creative man, but he's not organized. Everything was awry.
Well, he's very creative. He turned his announcer into his wife.
I became associate producer because I had to put everything together and make it work. And no matter what I did, it wasn't good enough for Jerry. And he was.
Or his mother.
His mother loved me at that point. And anyway, so we worked together for a year. hated each other, fought and fought and fought. And then that show finished. We did 65 of those.
Not a lot.
65 of those shows. And then I helped Jerry and Bucky because they sold a movie. What was that movie? And it had to be rewritten. The music one.
The Music Man.
Oh, that was Hope. About a little girl named Hope.
And what was the band it was written for?
Casey's.
And the Sunshine Band.
Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Okay, so I helped them, free of charge, and getting that all together and organizing again. And then I got a call from the executive producer from the first show. And he said, Jeff, we are doing a children's show, and we want you to produce it. And I said, oh, wow, Fred, that's fabulous. Thank you. And he said, I said, what is the show? And he said, it's called Stanley Smogless Steamer and Traveling Library Show. I said, oh, how adorable.
He said, great name.
It's Jerry Cutler's. I went, oh, no. Anyway, I said, okay, all right.
I thought you hated him.
I did hate him.
She did, but a job's a job.
And then... No,
not that easy.
Well, and then we were at a big dinner party, and there were lots of people, but we happened to be sitting at the same table. And I said, Jerry, isn't it ironic that I was told about your show before you were? Because he didn't know it had been picked up. And so he said, oh, yes, and by the way, you won't be producing it.
Oh.
And I said, okay. and called him some names under
yes,
the
Yes, he did.
But we can't do that here because you're a rabbi.
Oh, you can do it. Or you could tell me privately afterwards.
First word began with Jew.
Oh, yeah, she hadn't converted yet, right?
Anyway, so we went back and forth, and then I refused to do it. But then I kept getting calls from the director and everybody.
All right, long story short.
I did it.
She did it, and the rest. She was actually very nice.
Well, as they say in Brooklyn, if it's Bashert, it's Bashert.
Yeah, this was.
It was meant to be.
This, if anything, was meant to have out these
do you
two.
Are you kids
how many years
aware
ago
of that? Story.
They're yes. aware of everything. She tells them everything. There is nothing this girl doesn't tell them. And they feel so sorry for me.
Is it recorded any place? Because it's recorded now.
You'll ask the kids. And if we had a fight, she'll tell the kids. This is what, and your dad was wrong. And I don't know.
That's a very good story, the one that you told.
Oh, yeah,
going that
story.
Long together, hating each other. Then the second show, and now it's still not going to be good. Yeah. And then
I think he started
What made you say, I'll do that show? What changed your mind?
It was money. But the director I'd worked with on the talk show, and he hated Jerry too.
Everybody hates you. I like you.
And the director called and he said, he's not as bad as we thought.
He's worse.
He's right. Yeah.
And we really need you on this show badly. So anyway, I was on stage. We had to do 49 of those or something.
I know. We did one after
54,
another.
I think. And so.
Was that record? Is that on film or
kinescope? Tape.
And you have that?
Yes.
We only had one or two left.
I don't know. I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah.
We have a few of them.
They were syndicated.
I think we have Walters. I would hold
yeah,
on
I
to
think
Walters.
We do have Walters. Anyway, I would be on stage while he and Bucky were writing like mad, and I was seeing what worked, what didn't work. So after my day on stage, I'd come back and we'd sit around and talk about what had to change and what worked. And I think he started respecting my opinion
at that time. I respect you, and I love you very
as you bloody well should, Jerry.
Yes,
he's worked me to bloody death.
Right. So what happened after?
She's been promoted. She now runs the temple.
Yeah, I was supposed to go in for 7 weeks. I'm now there 7 years.
Well, I know. When I get the phone call from the recorded phone call, I see Jeff Cutler. Because my wife received the message.
That's right. She's been a, she's been an incredible partner.
What do you do when you get calls? Somebody wants to sell you something like aluminum siding, for instance, or whatever. I have a favorite thing I say to them.
How did we segue into that?
Phone calls and
phone calls in the night.
I would say either my mother's not home now. Then I stopped saying that, and I would say, I don't know why you're calling me. I live in an apartment.
But so, I do.
That's what we're saying.
Well,
now, okay,
you wouldn't be lying. I would be lying.
Okay, I'm getting now calls from something from mortgage companies, and they say, if you want us to be removed from the list, press 2.
That doesn't
work. I press 2.
No, it doesn't.
A day later, I get the same phone call.
From the same person.
Right. Well, they were recorded.
Are you getting on your cell phone as well?
Now I'm starting to.
Oh, yes, that's so annoying.
Even though I did what everyone told me to do.
I don't get annoyed because I figure people have to make a living. My wife, she gets.
You have no friends who call you, so whoever called you, happy to get it.
I want to talk. Well, I talk to people. I like.
So does he.
What I love is.
Do you convert them over the phone?
Jews don't convert, do they?
Huh?
Jews don't convert. I mean, we're
not. No, I mean somebody convert to.
We're not seeking people to.
They don't proselytize. They do convert, but they don't.
But we don't seek.
So they don't. No, they don't do like Mormons might do.
No.
Can't read this pamphlet. I'll check back with you next week.
Or on the streets. I was stopped the other day in Westwood Boulevard.
Yeah, I was stopped by a Hasidic Jew who wanted me to.
Who did you get stopped by?
Like film. And I do.
Was this person a hooker
or what? It's a mitzvah.
Those days are gone. But now this was they were with the Bible and wanted.
Oh, that's a 7-day Adventist.
These were from the Mormon Church.
Aaron, you're a Mormon, right?
Yes, I am.
Do you have people that are out in the street converting people, trying to bring people into the church?
We were talking about how I served a full-time mission. That's what missionaries do.
They do it in like Los Angeles and things in large cities?
All over the world.
You have to see the play, The Book of Mormon.
No, because I've never been approached by a Mormon. I've been by Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah Witnesses, but even by Hasidic rabbis.
You see many Mormons walking around our area because we live near the Mormon temple.
Oh, right.
Couple of blocks.
Yeah, and they're coming out to proselytize. White shirts, right, Aaron?
But they all wear white shirts.
They always dress properly.
They do.
It's purity.
Properly.
Yeah. Oh, they're wonderful.
Yeah.
And they're very intelligent, and God bless them.
Most of them are college educated. It's after college. Aaron?
A fair amount, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they are. Anyone I've spoken to has been very intelligent and very knowledgeable about the Bible, yes. And the only thing is that they don't let go. I'm a rabbi, yes, so?
Yes, yeah, so?
I mean, why don't you? actually, when I say I'm a rabbi, that ends the conversation. Okay. Yeah.
I was telling Jeff, generally like the Hasidic Jews from my neighborhood, Sherman Oaks, they want me to like film or put on
phylacteries,
which I do because it gives it. They say, I don't believe in it, even though I'm Jewish. They said, but it's a mitzvah for me, which is a blessing for them, and they get one step closer to wherever they're going.
Yeah, they believe that very sincerely.
Right, so it takes five minutes, and I do it.
Any religion, except the radicals, obviously the ISIS and so on, but.
If you convert to their way, don't they spare you?
Yes, they do spare you. Yeah. And if you convert to Judaism, they're not saved by any sense of the imagination. However,
there's a movie that delves into that whole subject to a great extent. Maybe you've seen it. The Kingdom of Heaven.
No.
If you could catch it on TV, see it.
Well,
it's quite good.
What is it about? What is it about?
Well, it takes place during one of the Crusades, around 1100 or thereabouts. And in a way, it's kind of anti-Catholic. At least that's how I interpret it. And the stars of the movie are Orlando Bloom, Liam Neeson, and Eva Green. They have the main parts.
Not a bad cast.
Mm-hmm. Who's Eva Green?
English actress. You
wasn't
must know
she,
her.
No, she was on a
TV. I don't play
TV. She was on a TV series, I think. In
she's
Oakland.
On one now called Penny Dreadful.
Penny Dreadful.
Oh yeah, I haven't been able to watch that.
But see the movie.
Okay.
They play it like maybe every other month on one of the movie King channels.
Yeah. Okay.
And because you're in that business,
yeah,
I think you should see it. It'll give you a different perspective.
Maybe you can convert.
Do you know, when I was producing the Chabad Telethon, I worked very closely with the Hasidim. And they're the ones who really gave me the love of Judaism and community.
Wasn't you?
Apparently.
No, I would have been a total anti-Semite had I just gone by Jerry with so many demands.
Well, when I was working at when I was working at KFAC, we would do part of the I sold them like an hour or two on the radio to do the telethon.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. Really?
Is that how we met you?
I don't think so. I don't know how we met.
Being anti-Semite, quick story. Maybe about a year or two, year and a half ago. I'm not sure of the date because I'm losing my mind. I went to one of the theaters on Wilshire towards downtown, but not fully downtown.
Wilshire.
Maybe that was it. Okay. And Theodore Bickel was performing that night. And it was right after we had him on our show. So I wanted to see the performance and so forth. And outside, while the people were gathering, getting ready, getting their tickets, we're to show them and get seated, there was this guy with a bunch of papers, about yay thick. It was a leaflet, whatever you call those things. And I happened to look and say, what are you passing out? And it was all kinds of Holocaust denial statements. And I said to this guy, you believe this stuff? Yeah, this is all, this business with the Holocaust is all made up and on and on. And then he said, you know what, you stupid son of a bitch? I was there then. I lied. I wasn't there. But I said it convincingly enough. He shrunk back. I said, if you don't get out of my sight, I'm going to take all those pamphlets and throw them in the gutter. Mm-hmm. And he just walked away from me.
Stick it somewhere. Throw it in the gutter.
Well, the gutter was wet. It was after a rain. It was a mini flood. And he'd have to bend down and pick them all up. And
that's when you should have
kicked him in the butt.
No.
Do you know, everyone gets very tired of hearing about the Holocaust, but it is so important. And I find as these generations, we're going into new generations, people forget. One project I'm working on is on this incredible, incredible woman. She's 85 now, but she came from a shtetl, and at 12 years old, her mother was killed there at the shtetl, and her father was killed. And so she was an orphan, and she lived in barns and the fields. She finally came to the United States and had a family here who put her through school. She was a teacher, a professor, taught history. And to such humanity from this woman, she's bright, she's glib. When she tells you about a day during that period, she tells you the smells, the colors, everything she remembers. And what she has to say, I think, is so important. And as she's saying, there's always a scapegoat somewhere, always a scapegoat. The Jews have been scapegoats for a long time, but the Armenians, the Buddhists are killing people right now.
Well, the Buddhists?
Yes, well,
I thought they love only peace.
Yes.
Well, the whole thing is it's, you know, I recognize, you know, the Holocaust and the situation and the horror of it. But it's happening today.
Yes, it is.
And most people look into Africa, in Sudan. and all these people that are being systematically killed.
Yep.
Or in Syria.
But let me bring it even closer to home, because I think we are akin to 1930s Germany, when Hitler found his way of blaming people, Jews, and got the whole system behind him, got elected. And I'm concerned with Trump and how it was the Mexicans and then the Muslims.
Buddhists, the Muslims, yeah.
And, you know, I always thought that he was Jewish.
No.
Trump?
Yeah. He seemed like he was.
Well, because his father built this project in Brighton Beach.
Yeah,
Trump Village.
What's one of the reasons? Mm-hmm. And he was from New York. Everything about him was New York.
I don't know if he believes in what he says. Sometimes I think he's saying things because it's, you know, he wants to be the rebel. He wants to be somebody that upsets the apple cart. He's appealing to people's basic instinct of fear.
I think he's running his whole campaign like a reality show. And even after the debates and after the election, the voting the other night, he held a press conference. And like on the Kardashians, if there's something would happen between a family member, they'd interview one of them to see what it was like, what they went through. And I think everything I'm looking at, it's a reality show.
Well, I don't think he's running for president. I think he's running for the Messiah.
Yeah.
I think he wants to be the anointed one.
Whatever he's running for, whatever he's saying, it's very meaningful to a lot of people out there.
Well, that's the disappointing thing. Not that he's doing it. He's one individual.
And the same thing happened in Germany.
But people believe him.
That's what I'm saying.
The times are different, honey, and
no,
the
well,
needs
right.
are different.
Back in Germany, they had the effect of World War I, horrendous reparations. Mm-hmm. Bad depression, worse than here. Nobody.
Yes, but that we're going on that. We're in war for how many years with Iraq and Afghanistan.
We've never been out of war. If you go back.
Yeah, but look at us. We're hurting financially.
Check with Bernie.
Every single one of us.
We're hurting because there are no jobs out there. And look what Disney is doing. They fired 300 people.
One department.
300.
What department?
I think it was
300, and they brought him from India somewhere, out of the country.
Oh, so they rehired to save money.
No, but they're making these 300
sit down with them and train them. Of course.
And if they don't, they don't get severance pay.
But they're paying less, I assume.
Of course.
Now, Fiorino did the same thing at HP.
But that's all union.
That's right.
Isn't Disney all union?
She fired a ton of people and had all the work done in Southeast Asia to make the company profitable.
But I don't know. If I was an executive in a business and I found out that I could make my product cheaper someplace else and the product was just as good, I don't know whether I wouldn't go to that country.
Well, that's what's been happening. Mm-hmm. You call up, you want your computer fixed, you get someone with an Indian accent.
Yeah, isn't it annoying?
It's terribly annoying.
No, actually, I like it. I usually get AT&T or a Time Warner. They're either in the Philippines or Mumbai.
Yeah.
But I like talking to the people. Once you break through.
I'm so frustrated by the time I get to it because I'm trying to deal with a problem. And then I tell them, I want to talk to someone in the United States. If you're not in the United States, put me on to someone in the United States. Then I go into cyber hell.
The problem is a lot of these people can speak technically. They can tell you what to do technically.
If you can understand.
Right, yes. But I say, well, what does that mean? Right. You know, I can go into my computer and I say, you do the alpha to the zato, but I have no idea what that is. And they say the same thing. I say, okay, could you tell me in English what it means?
Well, there's a lack of communication. Years ago, not that many when I think back, I ran an actuarial consulting company. And we were approached by a company, well, actually maybe two or three times, we were approached by companies in India to farm out the work to them. Mm-hmm. and we would save two-thirds. So if we kept our prices the same or maybe just lower them a tad, we'd be making a hell of a lot more money.
Right.
And I said, absolutely not. I have enough trouble getting the people here not to do the work, but to be able to communicate with the client.
Right.
I'm sure not going to be able to do that with people from Mumbai or wherever.
Do you realize if you did that, you wouldn't have to have the second job as an announcer? You could have been sailing.
I'd have more aggravation with that,
believe me. That is what Trump is doing, and it resonates with a lot of people in this country.
Well, he's talking about it. He doesn't have a plan. It doesn't matter.
He's giving them hope. Well, maybe this guy will do it.
Who else do they have?
Let me ask you the real question. Do you think he'll get the nod from the Republicans? Okay. Nobody knows for sure. Do you think there'll be someone else sneaking in or right around him or behind him and get it?
I don't see anyone.
If he does get the nod from the Republicans, who as of now seem to hate him more than the Democrats.
Let's say
he gets the nomination from the Republicans. Hillary will definitely get the nomination from the Democrats, unless she gets arrested by the FBI.
I suspect something is going down. Biden has opened the door. He's ready.
Then he knows something.
And that's what I think. She will eventually have to step down, and Biden comes in, and it'll be his.
But I didn't get to my question.
Yes, what is it?
If it's Trump and Hillary, could he beat her?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't say and know anything to Trump at this particular point. I remember when he was deciding to go in, everybody said, no, he wouldn't. He wouldn't declare. He wouldn't run. And then when he ran, everybody said, no, he wouldn't win this. And look where he is now.
But when he did it the last time, it was like a joke. So nobody believes him or believed him.
No, that's right.
But no one believes him now. And look where he is.
Well, now they're starting to believe. He's got it locked up.
You know that they believe because all of the professional Republicans seem to be – they're ready to kill him.
Yeah,
they don't want him.
And the more that the establishment knocks him, the more people say, right on, Don.
Nothing has worked so far.
They're anti-politician, and they have just cause.
Yeah.
But politicians have been terrible.
But I don't see him doing anything even if he was elected.
Yeah.
Who's he going to work with?
Well,
everybody.
Obviously, he's not going to do it before he's elected. Yeah. He talks about it.
Well, actually, he might.
Whether he'll be a good president, I don't think so. I hope he doesn't get it.
A friend of mine who I've known for a long time, most of my life, he says that it doesn't matter who gets in. Nothing will change anyway. It'll just be the same with a different person.
I don't think that's true.
I think it's been true up to this point.
No, look how George. But, if we didn't have George Bush, would you be in Iraq and the Middle East?
No.
So there was a president that made a difference. Of course, it was worse.
When
Bill Clinton was president and we had no debt when he left.
But what he did, he disgraced the White House. He disgraced the Oval Office.
There's nothing wrong with getting hit under the.
From my perspective, morally, and lying about it.
He's
not going to come out and tell the truth, or it's a heinous act that he did with this little girl.
She wasn't so little.
No, she's a big girl.
Well, and you know what? Our daughter Tess writes articles. For the Jewish Journal. And she really wants to do something on Monica because she feels that it's the Monica scandal, the Lewinsky scandal, mm-hmm. and his name is never even in it. And she said, I don't care if, you know, she was, what was she, 18, 19?
Around there, it's late teens, early 20s.
And if the president, is coming on to you, and you're an intern, and it was an attractive man. I mean, that's a big thing. Very few people.
Are you saying that she should have known better?
Well, she should have known better, but you know what? She was taken in.
It
by
was the
all
president of the United States, yeah. But every president, if you go back in history, most presidents,
hey, yes, have had affairs. So,
what about FDR? The guy was a gimp and a cripple, and he fooled around.
Yeah, if you had a wife like Eleanor, so would you.
If I were president.
Yeah, she was a bright woman.
Very bright. Yeah. Well, so is Hillary.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But I will never forgive her for Benghazi. I think that was disgusting.
And when
they were questioning her, she said, what difference does it make now?
Benghazi, it was four people were killed totally.
But listen, nobody ever asked the right questions. I saw when they interviewed her.
Right.
She came out better afterwards than when she walked in. Nobody asked the questions. How many times did they radio or call or wire for help? Okay. Mm-hmm. Are they logged in? Who logs them in? Who has the authority to send help? Who did not send help when the request came in so many times? They didn't ask any questions.
Well, wasn't it also that the Republicans denied a bill to get more money for troops, for guards?
I don't know if it was the Republicans.
It was Congress.
Okay.
But it was controlled by... Or it was a Republican Congress.
Do you guys see a lot of movies? Did you see the one about Benghazi?
3 hours? No.
You didn't? Okay, it came out a couple of months ago.
Was it 3 hours?
Three days.
13 hours.
13
hours.
We got the three right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they say that, you know, they could have been there. I think one report was they could have been there in 4 hours.
Yeah.
I heard from my cousin who used to be in with those people. He said there was a plane all set to go with the crew and everybody, and they could have been there in 2 hours from their base, and they were told to stand down.
But let's say they were there and a dozen soldiers
were
killed.
Who told them to stand
in the fighting?
Down.
Mm-hmm. Let's say they were there and a dozen soldiers were killed in the fighting. There would be soldiers killed, right, if they had gone to protect it.
But didn't Christopher say they were worried about this coming down? And I, as I understood it, you know, had been asking for some support.
Yes, he had.
And when, you know, what they did to this man, they castrated him, they sodomized him, they dragged him through the streets. And I mean, this poor man was such a victim. And she said, well, you know, what difference does it make?
He was tortured. And they don't.
Yes. Yes.
Only some of the reports said.
He knew the dangers, first of all, of going into that part of the country. And he knew the dangers of his office,
but
so he volunteered.
But he assumed that there
were... Yeah, that he'd have protection. He was an ambassador.
And we failed dismally. Well, and that's sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, on that note, do you realize that another show has passed?
Oh, my goodness.
No. Oh, my God. We can have more of these if you... So don't call us.
we'll get you a cot in the back.
Well, take a look at the time. It's been run.
I did.
You know,
it's amazing.
When you're talking about something that's of interest
to everyone... Yes, and when you start kicking...
I'm just wondering when
the outside world will be interested. I know we were interested. It was an engaging conversation. And thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. It's lovely.
And not next week, but you'll be back, I'm sure. Well, I want you to.
Definitely.
Yeah,
we'll talk.
We'll talk.
I mean, you'll have your agent.
It gives me an opportunity to take her out. And it's nice.
Well, and I don't get out
drive
very
in
much.
The air.
Have your agent give me a call, and we'll.
By the way,
that
the
reminds
was
me
awful.
Years and years ago in New York. If you took your date to night court.
Oh yeah, in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Stan, say goodbye. Really.
Goodbye. Well, I'm not leaving. I'm sleeping over tonight. We have another taping tomorrow.
Tomorrow we have another taping.
Okay.
Anyway, guys.
It was a pleasure. Thank you guys.
Thank you, Jerry Jeff.
Thank you.
Aaron.
Our pleasure and Aaron's pleasure.
Okay,
as well.
Aaron, it's a wrap.
You're all nice.
Aaron, you can go home.
God bless you all.